Here it comes, the latest people, trends, and news on sustainable living in and around our corner of the country. Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, Spotlight on the Southwest. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are listening to Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, Spotlight on Tucson Water Reliability, Water Conservation, exclamation point. I am Gina Murphy-Darling, and I thank you for listening. This is the fifth of a six-part series we are doing with Tucson Water Department to talk about what I believe is our most precious resource, and I'm not alone about that. It's water. And to help showcase many of the important conservation efforts and other important programs that are so reflective of this department's outstanding leadership efforts. And I have to say this, the series has been very well received. Thank you, our listeners, for writing. Keep the comments and the questions coming. The Tucson Water Department has been very responsive. So joining me in studio for the next 30 minutes are Daniel Ransom, Water Conservation Program Manager, and Fernando Molina, Public Information Officer from Tucson Water, City of Tucson. Thanks, both of you, for joining me in studio today. It's always a blast.
Hi, Gina. It's always fun being here with you.
Yeah, hello. Thank you for inviting us.
It's going to be fun. So before we get on with the show, as they say, I have two quick tips from our friends at Tucson Environmental Services about guidelines for blue barrel recycling, that pretty blue barrel that you're supposed to put your recycling in. Please do not put in tree trimmings, yard waste, or electronic devices in that pretty blue barrel. And if you don't know where to put those, I am inviting you to email me. It's like game on, Gina@MrsGreensWorld.com. And I pretty much know where anything needs to be recycled in this city, and I can direct you. And if you're from out of state and you're listening, I know how to track and go down that rabbit hole. So please feel free to email me. Just don't throw it in the garbage. And the second tip is to grab a pencil and paper and write down this website. It's tucsonaz.gov/do-more-blue. And I invite anybody to look at that because they will give you a complete list of things that can be recycled and what can't, as well as other information like pickup times. So let's get started because we're going to like speed talk on this show. There's so much to talk about that really matters. And I think it'd be great, since it is the conservation program, why don't we start with the most obvious? Why implement a conservation program in the first place?
Well, Gina, I think every community has a probably has a very different reason for doing a water conservation program. Some communities might do it to reduce energy costs or chemical costs. There may be some infrastructure issues where they maybe aren't able to meet demands. It may be a water supply issue like we see a lot in California. You know, those kind of curtailment conservation programs, they're running out of water. You got to do something quick.
Critical,
yeah. So we've been fortunate here in Tucson. Since the mid-1970s, we've had a lot of support for our water conservation programs. And in fact, ours had nothing to do with lack of water. It had had everything to do with lack of infrastructure.
Wow.
Tucson had grown a lot in the 50s and into the 60s, and by the 70s, our demands had really outpaced our infrastructure in that we couldn't pump enough water out of the ground fast enough to meet the demands. And for any of your listeners that were here during that time, and for those that weren't here, this will be an educational moment. Tucson looked very different up to the mid-70s. We had a lot of...
Really did. I was here.
Okay, yeah, so you know, we had a lot of grass. We had front yards with lawns, backyards with lawns, the side yards had lawns. I remember the medians along Speedway and Broadway had grass on them. And that's, you know, what's left from that is the palm trees, but imagine grass out there. A lot of higher water use trees for more humid areas of the country. And we introduced a program in the 1976, I think, 77, to voluntarily reduce our consumption because we simply could not meet those peak demands. And I think we talked about peak demands at some point.
And if anybody was around then, you have to remember what it was, because I would have gotten that question right on Jeopardy.
Yeah.
Beat the peak.
The peak we were trying to beat was that summertime peak, those last couple of days in June before the rains came in July. And again, all this was voluntary. we were able to get through without having it. We were able to defer the investment that we needed to make to drill more wells, to expand pipeline capacities and things of that nature.
Because the consumer really rallied.
And that's where, yes, and that's where this ethic that we have today as a desert community was born. It was during that. And it, like I said, it had nothing to do with water. It had more to do with infrastructure and the lack of investment. I mean, this whole water reliability series has been talking, we've been talking about the investments we make to water reliability. This beating the peak was actually an issue for us as long as we were a groundwater system. We had to be careful. We certainly didn't have the issues in the 90s that we had in the 70s, but as long as we were just pumping our groundwater, beating the peak was something that was pretty critical. Most people probably know that we don't use that term anymore because we beat the peak.
It's so retro.
You know, in the 90s, in the 90s when we were when I first came to Tucson Water and we were a groundwater system, it wasn't unusual to see peak day demands of 150 million gallons in one day. I think this past year it was 120 million gallons, and our population has grown, so that says a lot. So
it really does say a lot that you have beaten the peak, and
so
it's not necessary.
That was what initially got us into this business of water conservation programming. Our community has been, and politicians have been really supportive, businesses have been pretty supportive of it, and now we have a different perspective. It's not about so much reducing water use, and I think we talk more about efficiency in water use. We're not in the situation that California has found themselves in, or Oklahoma, where they don't have the water and they tell you don't water. We continue with the strategy of use your desert landscaping and changing out your more efficient fixtures. And we'll talk a little bit more about those kinds of measures that are there.
And so let's talk about, you know, in terms of all of the things, it never ceases to amaze me that you have to be keeping your eye on. It's not a static landscape, I would assume, from where you get this great infrastructure and you sit back and everybody puts their legs up on the desk.
No.
Because it's all going to unfold.
No.
What are some of the drivers that change and have to be considered in making, you know, making it all continue to work?
Yeah, well, for us, as I was saying, it was peak demand management. And that was a big effort that we undertook, and it took a while. And we're actually leaders in a big part of the country on this, is changing our landscape preference. You don't see grass lawns like you used to in the 70s. You see a lot more desert landscapes and, desert plants like the native trees and shrubs from other desert regions.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's been a huge driver. Today, what we look at it is more in terms of what's the future going to be like. We know that if we can reduce our demands through efficiency efforts, that frees up water for the future. So we're looking at more of a long-term gains that we get from the programs that we implement and the actions that our customers take. We've had pretty good impacts. We've seen our per capita usage rates have declined, and they
that's unbelievable.
Well,
it's
not
encouraging.
Unbelievable. What's unbelievable is that it's been sustained, because we've been our per capita usage rate, it's kind of gone up and down, but the general trend has been downward. Overall, our water use today is the same as, in terms of total volume, is the same as 1985, but we're serving about 240,000 more people.
That's a big number.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's another indicator that we know that it works. And I already referenced the peak demands have really been dropping substantially. It's just not even an issue for us in terms of being able to meet those last couple of days in June before the rains come, meet the demands. They're just not what they used to be. So that's a good thing.
We keep hoping the rains come, and they do.
And this whole program that we offer today for the past several years now is funded through a fee that's assessed to every water customer. If you look on your bill, you'll see a conservation fee. Daniel, what is it now? Like 7 cents per CCF?
It's 8 cents.
8 cents per CCF.
What's
per
a CCF?
Thank you. What's a CCF?
A CCF, that's our billing unit. A CCF is 100 cubic feet of water,
748 gallons.
And the other analogy, because 748 gallons, I mean, who knows what that's like, 748 gallons of milk jugs or gallon, you know, it's 1550 gallon drums. That much water passes through your bill, through your meter. That's one CCF. You get charged whatever the rate is at whatever usage block you're at. But that's how we're funded. Daniel's done a wonderful job since he's come here from Santa Fe to help us manage the water conservation program. So I'm really happy, because it makes my job a lot easier.
Yeah, and I'm really happy,
and he really
because
knows
we
the
have
stuff.
Water and I know it's safe.
Yeah.
So what about the historic goal of programming to reduce demands, demand management? What other kinds of things are you tasked with?
Yeah, well, historically, if we go back to the 70s, it was reducing demands because we had this problem not being able to meet demands. We could not deliver water to certain parts of town because we didn't have the infrastructure to get it there. So we reduced demands. We changed our landscape types. People responded very well to that. In the 80s, we come to the Arizona, the 1980 Groundwater Management Act, which imposed per capita usage limitations for all water providers in the active management areas in the state. So we were driven by reducing demands initially voluntarily to be able to meet demands, and secondly, after 1980s, it was a regulatory requirement. We've had no problems meeting those targets. We're actually way below the targets that were established for the current management period that we're at.
I just have to go back for a second.
Sure.
What did you do? Like, if someone, what do you mean I can't meet the demands? You couldn't deliver water to customers that needed it? So what did
In
they
the do? In the 70s, yes, that was the problem.
What did they do?
They went without water until we could fix the problem. I mean, if for those that have been here in the 70s, you remember the original Beat the Peak slogan?
Yeah.
Never water between 4 and 8 and only every other day, which horticulturally speaking is probably isn't the best advice, but that helped a lot.
It helped beat the peak.
That change really helped. And so we actually had areas of town that because the water was used up before it got to the end of the pipe. And so we had areas of town that we simply could not deliver water to during those hours between 4 and 8.
Got it.
People were coming home and turning on their sprinkler systems, watering their grass, watering their mulberry trees, taking care of all that kind of business.
Glad I did not live on that end of the food chain. Thank you very much. Okay.
So we're doing something a little bit differently now. You know, it's we've been asked to take on another task. We've been asked to look at rainwater and stormwater and consider that as a much broader water management strategy. You know, traditionally, Tucson Water has been managing groundwater resources. We've been managing surface water resources. Now we're incorporating what in the industry is called a one water concept and beginning to look more at effluent and also rainwater and stormwater.
So when you say you've been asked, who asked you?
This is Plant Tucson.
Okay.
You know, rainwater harvesting is something we've been promoting for 25 years since I've been at Tucson Water. We've always been promoting it. Mayor and Council has given us direction to move forward with this Plant Tucson,
which is great.
Like I said, we've been supporting it for 20 years.
Right.
The thing that's different about rainwater harvesting as a water conservation measure is it's really not a demand management strategy. What we're finding, and we kind of knew this because we researched this in the past, it's more of putting water to a beneficial use. And I can't tell you how many times I have been at a presentation, at a meeting, and somebody always focus groups, people will always comment, it makes me sick every time it rains and I stand at my doorway and I see all this water running off of my roof and down the street and it's just wasted.
I know, we just do kind of feel that way.
So we're taking this water. This is another definition of water conservation, is taking water that is wasted or perceived to be wasted and putting it to a beneficial use. So through our enhancing our rainwater harvesting programs and our stormwater management programs, what we're proposing on doing is taking a little bit of that water that runs off either off of your roof and using it on your property to a beneficial use, or if it makes it out to the street, designing landscape features that can collect some of that stormwater
without extreme
and increasing
contamination.
Tree canopy. It helps with contaminating cleaning up runoff, stormwater runoff. More importantly, what we're trying to do here is increase tree canopy in Tucson. There are specifically the south side and west side areas of town that really suffer from that. And as we look to the future and managing water supply, the connection is climate change. We need to make sure that we can get increased tree canopy to mitigate the impacts of climate change, of urban heat island, without putting a huge demand on our drinking water supply. So it's a different type of water conservation. We always remind people, don't expect to see your water bill go down if you implement these kinds of measures, because it really doesn't accomplish that in most cases. We do see it occasionally, but that's kind of the biggest change that we're doing. We're kind of expanding our worldview in terms of what is water conservation. And we need to make sure that people understand that it's different than what we are used to when we talk about water conservation here. But it's, I think in the long term, it's a pretty important step for us to be taking.
And it's a more integrated approach, if you ask me.
Because
you have the thought of the trees help.
Yes.
And we disappear all of those green islands and all that disappear,
right.
which does not help
right.
with the heat islands.
And so as we evaluate these programs, the things that we'll look at, it's, you know, with toilet rebate programs, which Daniel will talk about here in a minute, we look at, we actually monitor and see what's going on at the meter, and we see reductions in water use. As I said, we don't see that with rainwater harvesting, but we get other benefits. Increasing tree canopy is one of those. We also want to look, some of these design features can provide traffic calming for neighborhoods that maybe have the residents feel their traffic's moving through too fast. You can slow traffic down.
Boy, have
with
I
some
seen
of these
that
designs.
Around Tucson.
And yeah,
a lot more.
And neighborhood beautification. You
yes.
know, everybody likes to park under shade, and if you have more shade on your streets, you know, it'll make it a nicer looking place. And
everybody
you can park
likes
in the
to
shade.
Park under shade. I've walked miles to make sure I get mm-hmm. under shade. So it's a really perfect segue to ask, how do you get? It's encouraging to me to hear that you're. Demands are down, that people are more conscious because you're having an effect. But how do you get the consumer to conserve and learn about the programs you have other than Mrs. Yeah. Green helping to spread the
well,
word?
We certainly appreciate your help.
Takes a real big
We rely on different methods. We
yes.
have a we're a transient community. We have people moving here. We have people leaving here. We have
winter visitors.
We have winter visitors. So we have to rely on a variety of methods. We're a big utility. We have over 700,000 customers that we serve. So we do public information programs, like I'm doing here today. We're out here talking. I'll go and talk to a group. If you have a group or an organization, we'll come and talk.
We Rotary run, clubs, all
we
those
run
kind of
We run public
things.
Service announcements. If you, you know, you can get pamphlets and information brochures from us. We have education and training programs. And we have probably, I'm almost certain that we have the most robust education program for youth in the state. We do more than probably anybody in the state combined. But we also have some training programs for adults. In schools.
In
yeah.
schools, which is
So we have
great.
School programs for students. We have programs to train teachers. We have specific programs for adults, too. So if you're a homeowner, we have our SmartScape program that you can go to. If you're a landscaper, SmartScape also works with the professionals in landscape management. We have direct assistance programs. So this is our auditing programs. We have our Zanjero program for residential customers. And we, Daniel will talk a little bit more about this too, is our TAP program, our auditing program for commercial customers.
So what's the Zanjero program?
The Zanjero program is a residential water auditing program.
Okay.
If you're a Tucson Water customer, you can call the customer service number. It's 791-3242. And you can schedule an appointment to have one of our trained water auditors review your home and basically just look at how you're using your water, and they'll provide you with recommendations on how you might be able to make reductions. We do toilet tune-ups, and we do showerhead exchanges, and it's a very good program if you're concerned about maybe your water bills are coming in too high.
So, and it's also shocking when you know how much just a leaky faucet can lose water, and your shower head
yeah.
and a toilet that runs. The numbers blow your
yeah.
mind when
and,
I first started doing this.
Right, and the volumes are one thing, but then when you look at your bill because of our rate structure, as you start using more water, you start paying more for it.
Right,
and
right.
so even though the drip is constant, the charge isn't. It goes up exponentially. So
and the program is free.
And the program is free, yes. So those are the financial incentives. We have the rebate programs, but our rate structure, as I just said, it's designed to really encourage people to pay attention to how much water they're using. And so the last one, and I usually kind of tell people the progression is we ask you to do it with our information programs. We teach you how to do it with our education programs. We come and do it for you with our direct assistance programs. And then we give you a financial incentive. And when all else fails, you know, we make you do it. There are ordinances
there's
in
mandatory.
Place. Yeah, there's ordinances
for
in
everything
place.
Everything else, there's mandatory.
Yeah, ordinances and building codes really, that actually provides this efficiency that we talked about earlier into the long term.
Yeah, we don't have really to, need the juice.
We don't have to convince somebody to change out their toilet. When you build a new home today, it comes with a efficient toilet. We don't have to try and convince some of our commercial property owners to take out a lot of that grass that was there since the 1970s and 80s because the Xeriscape ordinance mandates what it looks like and what kind of plants you can use.
It's so wise.
New commercial development, we don't have to ask people to do rainwater harvesting for new commercial rainwater or new commercial development because ordinances mandate a certain percentage of your landscape water demand be met through rainwater harvesting practices and techniques.
Yeah, yeah.
So we keep busy. We actually just recently got an award, Arizona Forward,
I put that up on Facebook.
Oh, good.
We were on it, and there.
One of the awards that we got was for our conservation and education program. I think the other award that we got was for our advanced oxidation process, which I think I talked about in the water quality section.
Yes, and I was thrilled to see that because I love Arizona Forward, mm-hmm. but typically a lot more Phoenix agencies submit. So when I saw that, we got an award last year, Mrs. Green's World, and when I got that email, or it was on Facebook or something, and I'm like, yes.
Well, this is only the second
Tucson
year.
Agencies, yeah.
This
yes.
is only the second year that they've opened it statewide. So they have been kind of Maricopa-centric.
They have been Maricopa-centric. Yeah, it used to be called another thing. It wasn't Arizona.
It was Valley Forward.
Valley Forward. Yeah, so we're happy.
So anyway, that's what we do. I want to give Daniel some time here so he can talk
Daniel,
about
you've been
the
so patient and you know so much. So let's talk about some of the rebate programs. And it sounds really ridiculous, but I'm a consumer, an ultimate consumer. People love rebates.
They do.
They do. It's like it's really an incentive.
And we have some great rebates that we can talk about. Where do you want me to start? Let's go with the
start. Let's start the toilet.
The easy picking, right? Toilet's one of the first things that you want to do.
Everybody uses them.
They're so easy. If you have an older toilet, 3.5 gallons per flush or more is how a rebate works. It's a $75 rebate. In our programs, people are paying on average about $180 per toilet. And the payback to the customer after they replace that toilet is less than 2 years. And so after that, the savings go on.
And we did it. Mrs. Green had to do it because people use our toilets.
So how could you not want to change out your toilets? It doesn't matter who flushes
flushing.
It. Yeah.
Guilt-free flushing.
Right. 1.2 gallons per flush per toilet. They're called high efficiency. They're very good toilets. They're not like the old 1.6 low flow toilets that
they're not low flow.
They're
Say
tested.
That again. They're high efficiency.
Yes.
You swish ours down, it makes a noise, and you better not be sitting there, which is probably too much information. Let's move right on.
Yeah, so that's a great
I'm
one.
I'm not as interested in this next one, but do tell. Commercial urinal rebates.
Commercial
I'm
urinal.
Stepping up
well,
for that
you know.
One.
We have expanded that program from our previous program because we do include water-free urinals. A lot of people don't like them, but if they want to use them, they eliminate all water use.
They don't bother me at all.
And we find Mrs. Green in the men's restroom.
That's another interesting conversation. Okay, I promise to keep us on track,
so
and I just broke my promise.
We do have a urinal rebate, $200 per urinal.
But it does
urinal.
Matter. It really does.
It does. Yeah.
It does.
And it can
joking,
make a big difference, especially in your commercial bathrooms that get a lot of use. Definitely. And our high water use commercial bathrooms are the best ones to change out fixtures because of the high use that they get. They can save a lot of water.
And save money for their business. It's really important, and it's going to be more and more and more important as the climate gets a little bit warmer.
Very quick return on investment.
What kind of rebates do you give for clothes washers?
Clothes washers. That's one of our new programs that we just implemented, and we're having a great success with it. A lot of people applying for it. We're offering a clothes washer rebate for $200 to purchase a high-efficiency clothes washer, and we have a qualified list of that. So when you purchase off of the qualified list, you're going to get a very efficient clothes washer. And with purchasing these, you're going to save a lot less water, but not just saving water, you're going to save energy.
So what is the difference? Is it just that, is it the, how, like, does it weigh the clothes and puts just water in that it's on the clothes load?
New
what
technology.
What are the changes? New technology?
The front loading are your new technology. They
right.
use
They're
a lot
better.
Less water, and you'll find that these work really good. They spin all the water out, so when you go to do drying, you actually use less energy to dry the clothes.
So really,
they come out of the washer with less
with
moisture.
Less water on them.
Yeah,
right. It really matters, like especially for blue jeans.
Yeah,
that's one of the
huge save a lot of drying time. So a lot of energy savings there, not just water savings, and payback on those are really quick. And we have seen machines on sale for $449, $200 rebate. Customers are paying basically $250 to get
for
a brand new high-efficiency clothes washer.
That so they'll save money on
there
forever.
Are some great deals to be found out there.
I call that the green trifecta.
Yes.
Okay.
So it's a great program, and like I say, we've giving out a lot of rebates for clothes washers. Fernando talked a little about rainwater harvesting, but we do have gray water system rebates. So
if you put one in, you get reimbursed for the cost of the putting in the system?
Yeah.
Portion of the cost,
the qualifying materials and labor. And one of the things that we're seeing is that most of these installations are what we call laundry to landscape. You're basically using your laundry water and sending it out to the landscape so you can add additional water to that landscape without it going down the drain. And it's just another way to add additional water.
And can I just ask one really good consumer question? Does it matter what kind of laundry detergent is used? Do you recommend to use? Because we are very conscious of that, obviously. Mrs. Green, hello.
There are some recommendations. There's not a lot of information out there, but a lot of it is to use a biodegradable type detergent or cut down on your detergents.
There's a lot of really good stuff out there, too. Yeah. I mean, there is. You can, at Target, like Method. I'll do a shout out for them. I have vetted them, and you can get it at the supermarket, which is what I want to do. I don't want to have to order it online.
Yeah, and the thing that you want to watch out for is detergents with low sodium amounts, because sodium in our clay soils here don't mix well. That's where the problem comes in.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
And these systems typically have either a shutoff valve or a way to still send water down the drain when you don't want that water to go out on your landscape, like doing maybe sometimes if you're doing whites and you're doing it with, put in the Clorox or something like that. But also if you're doing diapers, you don't want that water going out to your landscape either.
Right. And we don't want to be using Clorox out there. That's another show, people. Mrs. Green says just use vinegar. Okay. How to get that in.
Definitely. And so we'll move on to the rainwater harvesting rebates. You can get up to $2,000 for a rainwater harvesting system installed, up to $500 for passive systems. And that's one of our biggest budgeted items for rainwater harvesting.
And
it's very popular. Yes.
We didn't script that, Fernando.
Yeah, no.
So popular. I mean, we took a group of our Rotary Club out to rainwater harvesting. You know who I'm thinking of. On Dodge.
Watershed Management. Yeah.
And you would not believe how many people jumped on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a neat place to visit when you see what they water that property with from rainwater harvesting. So do they have to take classes?
I was just going to mention that. Yeah, for the gray water and the rainwater,
so
we
intuitive.
Offer a free workshop, and we tell people or teach people how to all about rainwater harvesting,
really
gray water.
You have to know what you're doing.
Right. And well, so they understand it a little bit more. So there's maintenance with these systems. It's not just installing them, so we want them to know how to do that. And so they get this free workshop, and then they qualify for some great rebates.
And that's the key. It's the two qualifications for the gray water and the rainwater rebate are you have to be a Tucson Water customer, and you have to take the workshop.
Right. It only
makes
sense.
So that's a prerequisite for qualifying for the rebate.
Yeah, and I also like your point, Daniel, that it's not just, you just don't do it and then walk away and everybody's kumbaya and lives happily ever after. You have, there's maintenance issues, and as I said, you really have to know what you're doing. How much of a rebate? Up to $2,000?
Up to $2,000. It's up to $500 for passive systems, and for those that don't know what passive is, it's the earthworks involved with just directing water to areas of your property.
And so
you can direct it. And so when you get a rain, it goes directly to the plants. When you do cisterns, that's storing the water for later use.
And you can put a hose in it and use it to water the plants.
Right. And usually the systems are gravity fed, so it doesn't have to be complicated.
Got it. I got it. Okay, so we have two more that we want to cover. Commercial irrigation upgrade?
Yeah, we're just bringing that back so you can have a more efficient irrigation, because when we talk about water use and efficiency, as we did earlier, by being efficient in your landscape, you can save a lot of water in the outdoor realm. But also, let's not bypass our commercial audit, and we're calling it TAP, Tucson Audit Program. Brand new program. We're out there working with the commercial customers and we offer free audits to the businesses. They can get a report, recommendations on how to save water, and then we offer them rebates to implement those retrofits.
And is it like, who are the high water users? Is it like car dealerships? Who are the high volume water, consumers that would be interested in this?
Resorts, big hotels, resorts, hospitals are a very large water user.
Right.
Things like that.
Are schools?
Business complexes. Schools probably fall inside
complexes?
Of there. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I am getting the severe 1 minute warning mark, and we have to wrap it up. We got a lot covered, but I don't want to end the show without talking about ways to get in touch with you.
Sure.
Because that's really important.
The phone number for our office, the Public Information and Conservation Office, is 791-4331. Another way you can get through to us is through our website. Everything that we talked about today, information
is on
our website.
And it's user-friendly.
And you can also send us a message through our website.
Or Gina at Mrs. Green's World. We're getting
that works, too.
TucsonAZ.gov/water. Two great shows coming up this week on October 1st. Barbara Mowat, who's talking about what she's doing with female entrepreneurs for the greater good. And we have Judy Simmons from Goodwill talking about how to green your Halloween. It's one of my favorite shows to do all year. Thank you, Daniel. Thank you, Fernando. time really does fly when you're having fun.
Thanks for having us here again.
Thank you.